Hello and welcome to Untold, the story of the Jamaican community in Calgary, Canada, a podcast produced by the journalism student at Mount Royal University as part of the Community Podcast Initiative. The series explores the stories of Jamaicans across Alberta to learn more about their culture and heritage. We'll talk to people about what it's like to leave Jamaica and come to Canada, how they've adjusted to life here in Calgary, and the successes and challenges they've experienced. We'll also explore how these individuals have shared their culture and experiences with Canadians through food, poetry, spirituality, career, and education. Many of these narratives have been overlooked and left untold. I'm Talha, your host, and in today's episode, we sat down with Mr. Pennant, the president of the Canadian Jamaican Association of Alberta at the association's headquarters, who talked to us about his early life back in Jamaica, the importance of education, and the value of poetry. He may recite one for us later, so stay tuned.
Born in Jamaica, and I left Jamaica at the age around 24. So I went to elementary school, middle school, and high school there. Great things about it that most of my formative years were there, and the memories as a child growing up, great memories growing up as a child. And of course, you're growing up in areas where you are seeing life transform in different ways. And one of the things, and especially where Jamaican parents is concerned, they're always telling you to seek education, because that is going to be the changing thing in your life. And as my mother would always say, get that piece of paper. Get that piece of paper.
Education is important, but so is human connection.
You're growing up in a village environment where everybody knows everybody. You know your neighbor's name, you know everybody, whether you're playing on the streets or you're playing, whatever you're doing, flying kites, whatever you're doing, everyone is a part of the whole thing. And you grow up that way, knowing persons. So even when they leave, you know their children. So everybody, and there's this level of respect that you will have gotten from those as adults. So you know them from they were born until they become adults. So of course, you have that. And that in itself also influenced not just the community spirit, okay, but also your experiences as you leave to go to another country. Because now you're looking at the things that you probably, sometimes you thought that, this was not okay, because you were living in certain circumstances.
The education is still important to your kids and their kids as it is to you?
Yes, education is very much important. I put it as it's a parachute when you're flying above the earth. If you don't put it on, don't jump. Okay, so make sure you have it, because it's best to have it and not use it than to need it and don't have it. We also have to be very cognizant of the changing landscape of education, right? Where, once it was, you got to be a doctor, you're going to be a lawyer, you're going to be all that straight professional. But now you realize that the vocations, okay, the person who's a carpenter, the person who's a welder, the person who's a mechanic, those are part of the whole free of life, and you need them. You need the person who's picking up the garbage. You need the person who's painting, because when you're not able to find the time to do it, maybe you can do it, but not able to find the time to do it.
No matter what you learn, as long as you respect and appreciate yourself and others and what you have, your purpose in life is fulfilled.
But education is always very important, and still always, I believe, should be the pinnacle of everything. And it doesn't have to be formal education in a classroom. It can just be outside there learning something to do as well. My training in terms of studying is in biochemistry, right? Mm-hmm. So that's what I studied in school. I'm a totally science person. However, in my first year of high school, I read Shakespeare's As You Like It. And the language itself was just beautiful. I just love the language of Shakespeare. And then another huge part of that was, you grew up in Sunday school as well in Jamaica, so the Bible itself was also written in that kind of a Shakespearean language, so there was some familiarity with it, right? But I just loved the way Shakespeare language, and I started to read more and more, write more and more. Even though as a science person, I also had a good affinity for English, So, you know, literature was very something that I loved. So reading more, reading a lot of poets and all that too. So it did not happen overnight. It was a journey, the transitional journey that moved into to a place where after that, then you can see how words are beautiful, how you can put words together just to capture something that is not necessarily yours, but someone else's experiences.
When did you write your first poem?
I think my first time I can recall was I was in just about grade 7. That was in middle school. I was in grade 7 back in Jamaica. There was an incident that happened in one of the parishes, and it was something that, you know, we were talking about it in school, and we just there, and I just started writing about it. It was a tragic incident, actually. Yeah, so it was something that we just, as seventh graders, you know, another friend of mine, we just started talking about it. We just started penning it down. I can only remember the topic of it, but I can't remember anything about the words. It was just, you know, we gave it to the teacher, and it was that's it for that.
So did your parents somehow affected your poetry, or they influence you?
Not necessarily in terms of the poem, but always to pursue, you know, pursue education, pursue your love. So, and I recall, so you have parents as well as teachers that were very instrumental in that regard. Because I remember my middle school principal, again, he would speak to us like he was a dictionary. So, and you're talking about 13-year-old kids, okay, and using words that are alphabet long plus 27 more letters in there. It's just long. But just the way he articulated himself, you wanted to emulate. So we started to just read our dictionaries like a regular novel. And that in itself inspired us to do more and more, just fall in love with words and to write.
Why do we need poetry at this age and time?
Poetry is not only for this age and time. Poetry has been one of the oldest art, actually. So for we talk about Shakespeare, and it's been in the 17th century and earlier. You have all those poets that were, and I think as a part of it, it was one of those piece of art and expression that was more acceptable even eons ago, okay, because you never found a lot of persons were writing in prose, and so you will find that the poet, okay, will read verses and people will sit down and listen to the poet read, okay, because they can tell the story in shorter lines and in less words, and they can still capture the flavor of something there. And it was used for also political aspects of things. Okay, they could use poetry to speak to a political power, use a political voice. You can use the artistry of it as well. So it's relevant then, and it is relevant now. As you will see, even the war that's taking place even in the Ukraine, you have soldiers on the field who are just using poetry to document what's taking place on the field right now. So in the Middle East, same thing is happening. So poetry has been used to capture and to tell the stories of different persons and places and things over time. So it's relevant now as well.
This might like sound like a stereotypical question, but what do you think of Bob Marley?
well, not stereotypical, of course, you know, but definitely is one of our, and Bob Marley, although he was a singer, is also a poet. If you listen to the way he put his lyrics, they are very poetic, you know, in the way they are written, right? But of course, Bob Marley is one of my heroes, definitely. I know all his songs, listen to them, you know. I mean, I right now in my car, I just listen to them because one of his songs, you know, and as you, I don't know if you have seen a movie recently, but his movie about his life, you know, just, of course, as a part of it, was one of the things that was well captured, you know, talked about how he really, it's the humanity of him, human, you know, how he loved humanity and how he wanted to see a world that was enveloped in love and peace and harmony. And I think when you listen to his words, even though some of them may be revolutionary, in a sense, is to bring about that sense of love and peace that we all are looking for every time. So yes, I definitely admire Bob Marley, and I'll be writing sometimes and I'll be listening to Bob just to get that kind of a vibes and everything.
Even though he's successful, his son Ziggy, he is good, but he isn't as impactful as Bob. Why do you think that is?
Bob was raised in a different time era when things were different. There were political upheavals. There were different suffering taking place, you know, based on the ghetto where he was living, right? And all the things that were, you know, different oppressive things that were taking place, political upheavals and factions taking, you know, so it was a different time for Bob. So he could capture what was taking place in his environment and around him in because he was living in it. Whereas Ziggy might have a different experience, right? He grew up in a little more affluence because of what Bob's success is. He grew up into a little more affluence. So his experience was different. Ziggy started to travel more so he can see the world from a different viewpoint versus where Bob was, or he was entrenched within a different landscape at the time. So the experiences are different. So that's why the music is also different coming from both of them.
Where do you see yourself in 10 years in terms of writing?
It is my hope. It is my hope. So Turning Pages is the first of three of a trilogy, okay, of poems. So Turning Pages is the first of three, and the other two manuscripts are actually being worked on right now, you know, fine-tuning everything to go to publishing. So in the next decade or so, all being well, good health, and everything is still going on. Well, you know, my hope is that I will be doing more writing, of course, more traveling, more to get more, you know, experiences, because my writing does not only encompass my own experiences. I do that also with other persons, you know. I'll capture the experiences and I will pen it that way. Or I could see something that's happening around me. I could see something that's happening in a movie. And it just triggers a writing to capture something that I can share with my audience.
So I guess your writing is the way of you're passing on your legacy to someone you probably never even see or hear in a few years from now.
Correct. And of course, you know, books are perennial, right? They're going to be there, you know, forever. It's like music. They never die, right? Memories, they never die. So you'll find that maybe as we read today, we're still reading Shakespeare. We're still reading some of the, you know, some of those Langston Hughes, Claude McKay. We're still reading some of those guys who are been before, and they're still here in their words. So, you know, hopefully, yes, somewhere down the line, there will be another Keegan. Okay, now Natalia was gonna, you know, say, okay, yeah, there was a David like you. Okay, something like that. Yes.
What do you think of social media in terms of writers trying to expand their work? I mean,
it's a good thing. Social media is a very good thing, because the huge part of social media is that it's immediate. So there are some pluses and there's, of course, some minuses, right? Pros and cons to that. It's good that it's immediate. And because of the current generation, because, of course, we are so attached to our phones and our computers, you know, they are literally an extension of us. So it's immediate, persons can see it. The other side of that, because it's so immediate and it's always in the 24-hour cycle, so someone will see that and it's forgotten already. So there is no real entrenchment into it. There's no really delving into something to, you know, unless someone keep at it, when you say going viral. So if it doesn't go viral, it seems like it has no real value. Whereas the print material, it's always there. It's not just a cycle. You can pick it up anytime and you can go back to it. So as one wise man told me, a short pencil is better than a long memory. So if you write it down, you can always go back and see, right? So the social media, and again, because it's also, it's technology, right? And one button can wipe out everything. You know, as we've seen recently, a big block out of all the information, right? So that can change so easily, as it goes up. Whereas you have the print material, of course, it's going to be there. You know, the longevity of it is greater. But I do support that the platforms that are there are very helpful in terms of propagating the poetry and the music and everything else.
So how do we get newer generations to appreciate printed material? Because like you said, they're all through their phones. They're having access to this 5-second TikTok videos. They consume a million video, but they find it difficult to read one page. So how do we make them enjoy reading more?
I don't know if I fully have the solution to that, but suggested solution, definitely. And I think what, you know, if we are going to be able to impact and influence the next generation, that is to show them the value of what it is, what books are. So even book clubs in schools, they should be able to do that because they're actually still using books in their courses in school. So having those, and again, it's the educators have a huge impact on that.
How do your responsibilities as president of the Jamaican Canadian Association of Alberta interact with your art? Like, do they overlap at all?
Yes, in some sense of the word. The responsibilities are different, but overlapping because, of course, it's the community that we are actually reaching out to. And my book launch was actually done here at the JCA headquarters here. So, yes, and we're looking to touching base with our communities, with persons, and of course, you know, history is always in the community. Persons who came to Calgary 2 decades ago, 3 decades ago, of course, their stories are different, so you can help to capture their story. So of course, yes, there is that intermingling of both places. It's officially representation of the Jamaican community here in Calgary, okay? And We of course, build on propagating Jamaican culture, Jamaican, you know, foods, cuisine, everything, all that. We want to make sure that we still, so if you're born in Jamaica and you're away from Jamaica, you still have a piece of Jamaica here. If you are a second, third generation Jamaican, you still can get that touches here, that in terms of the culture. So in terms of the cuisine, we still do. So we have one of our programs that we do in July. It's called Grab and Galang. Basically, we cook food and persons will order food, and it's all Jamaican food, and they get it here. We do a backpack program again in July. So that is to, we basically just give a backpack to the school students from elementary to high school. And it doesn't matter what if you're Jamaican or not, it's that we're giving those out. We give out scholarships every year. So we give out at minimum 5 scholarships every year to students of Alberta. We give out at least one, sometimes maybe 2, but at least one of an international scholarship to a Jamaican student studying in Alberta, okay? And so we are in the community. We also have what you call a benevolent committee. So for members of our community who maybe lost someone, who's having, you know, circumstance, we try to reach out to help them as much as possible. We do also have other celebrations. We celebrate our national independence, okay, in August. And so we'll have a civic ceremony or a flag raising ceremony. And we also have other celebrations, that a dance or something like that, you know, just to make sure we do that. We also making sure that our kids in the community, there are a Christmas party for the kids every year, okay, of the community. So they come in, they'll have a real good time eating toys, Santa Claus, all that for the kids. And again, New Year's Eve, every New Year's Eve, we have a New Year's Eve gala. It's a black tie affair, mm-hmm. And everyone comes in and just have a real good time to begin the new year.
Now that you've been here for many years, did your writing somehow change? Or did your writing change from back when you were in Jamaica and now you're here, or they're still the same?
It evolves differently based on the landscape, because part of my writing, yes, I'm from Jamaica, and also part of it was in the States, because I lived in the States for a period of time as well too. So there are influences in that landscape that also filters in my writing, influences here in Calgary that filters in the writing as well too. So there is a hybridization of those different landscapes. So the memories, the experiences bring about the writing as you go along. But yes, definitely there has been some evolution in terms of the writing.
And did you think that your time in the States Did you face any challenges, I guess, that are not very obvious, more than they did here, or is it the same?
No, it's not the same. The challenges in the States are way different. And I can tell you, as a former teacher in the States, you know, there were things that I see in the community that are different from here. And I talked about in the school community. Okay, it's very different from what you see here. So yes, and the influences are very different and the experiences are way different. Much more common in Calgary, put it that way.
And last, would you like to recite one of your favorite poems for us?
The Bleeding Rose. I squished the rose and it bled. To my eyes, a fright. Its fragrance absent when to my nostrils held. Normal it appeared, so I was led. Somehow devoid of insight, I squished the rose and it bled. Everything seemed right, a perfect weld. Petals reflecting light, yet its fragrance absent when to my nostrils held. To separate them, I was compelled, but withdrew with might as I squished the rose and it bled. I wondered, could its integrity be upheld? But worried, something's not right. Why its fragrance absent when to my nostrils held? And now evidence can't be withheld. I ponder the rose's plight, knowing its fragrance absent when to my nostrils held. This, when I squished the rose and it bled.
Oh, well, thank you very much, sir, for your time. And hopefully this work of us will be here for the rest of eternity.
Thank you very much, and I appreciate you both coming. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
That was Mr. David Tennant, the president of the Jamaican Canadian Association of Alberta. Thanks for listening to Untold, the story of the Canadian Jamaican Association in Canada, a podcast produced by the journalism student at Mount Juron University in Calgary as part of the Community Podcast Initiative. I'm Talha Abu Safi. This series was produced on the land of the Setape, Blackfoot, Nakoda, Tsuut'ina, and Métis people. We recognize the steward of this land and the knowledge they bring to our understanding of authentic storytelling. Special thanks to Dr. Marva Ferguson and the community and Jamaican Community Association of Alberta, who have been so supportive in helping us put this series together. Be sure to subscribe to hear the latest episodes and discover new podcasts from the Community Podcast Initiative on our website, thepodcaststudios.ca.